Listen up when I talk, I'm giving you the realest, I'm giving you my heart, this could take you to the dealership, cop the whip that you want, don't come back with that Honda, have a whip game so proper, they looking up when they talking down, down, cause you know, that they don't approve if you don't let it show. But we got nothing to prove, money. In the streets like we got nothing to lose, money. My homies are rolling, pushing the whip like a stone. I fall in the morning, I fall in the morning. My homies are rolling, pushing the whip like a stone. I fall in the morning, I fall in the morning. Zone in, I fall in the morning. Yeah, I'm zoning, I fall in the morning. My homies are rolling, pushing the whip like a stone. I fall in the morning, I fall in the morning. My homies are rolling.
I just finished bartending and it's 3 a.m. Heard you out the after party with your girlfriends, with your girlfriends. I like your girlfriends there, but the life. Every time I'm in the building, man, they on the way. White girl rocking Lafer. Her favorite song is Jingy the Raptor. She caught an X-Man like a scissor, but she stick to the script like a knocker. I brought some ramen pineapple to my ting ting. She said, please keep it quiet, my roommates are sleeping. So I'm quietly creeping under the bed, I'm overachieving. In tango, she's in a booty, daddy key. I like him when you spit before she gets to me. Then I got a text from a man saying, where you at? We got a dip. It's 4 a.m.
My homies are rolling, pushing the whip like a stone. I fall in the morning, I fall in the morning. My homies are rolling, pushing the whip like a stone. I fall in the morning, I fall in the morning. Zone in, I fall in the morning. Yeah, I'm zoning, I fall in the morning. My homies are rolling, pushing the whip like a stone. I fall in the morning, I fall in the morning. My homies are rolling.
Jesus Christ, that was a heavy night. What went on? It's moments like this where I take a step back and I think about all the things that are good in my life.
Yeah, big talking brewskis. Marissa Smith is who you see. What a cooler combo in here. Crack a cold one, we're on the air. Big talking brewskis. Marissa Smith is who you see. What a cooler combo in here. Crack a cold one, we're on the air. Kicking back, having a few beers, we're chatting. Pull up your chair, we're all relaxing. Any subject, we never dismiss. Big talking brewskis with Marissa Smith. Comedy, sex, relationships, more. Any subject, we got it in store. Big talking brewskis is coming in live. Crack one open, Marissa has arrived. Big talking brewskis with Marissa Smith. Yeah.
Hey guys, happy Friday. This is Big Talkin' Brewskis. I'm Marissa Smith, and we've got Rodney Daniels with us.
What's up, folks? Happy Friday.
We've got Peter Garacci with us.
Yeah, say it with confidence. You said it right.
All
right,
because I was just like, too many vowels. I can't do it. And then we've got Dara Jamot with us.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
Good.
Happy Friday.
Crack
it open. It's brewski's time.
Peter, how was your week?
So far, so good. I just did a show at Gotham on Wednesday.
Nice.
And I'm here tonight. I'm excited to be here. Cool. Other than that, I bought Pinocchio on Blu-ray, which was great.
Oh, I didn't even know that was available on Blu-ray.
I didn't know it either. It's like, you know, like... I guess we're all around the same age, like Disney movies would disappear for a long
yeah,
time.
Yeah, they went in the vault.
Yeah, in the vault. And so, it's but real quick, my mom has every Disney movie on VHS.
Oh, wow.
And I found a stash one day, and I was like, Mom, what are you doing? She goes, I'm saving this for my grandkids. This was 15 years ago.
Okay.
Well, she, nobody in my family knows how to make money on anything, so I don't believe that she's going to make any money.
Wait, VHS like, tapes are worth a lot of money.
Yeah, if they're, like, sealed, like, certain ones.
Oh, wow.
But I was like, Mom, you're not going to be able to find a VCR. And she goes, oh, no, I have one of those, too.
Oh.
So, like, I was thinking about that because I had always heard that you can't get these movies. And then I went to Best Buy and they had Pinocchio. Ah. And I was like, I got to get this.
Yeah, maybe they opened the vault for
it
Pinocchio.
It holds up. It's yeah. great.
Didn't Lion King, I feel like, just, like, something just happened, so, like, a commercial for, like, Maybe. Lion King, like, coming out, like, on DVD or something?
It's possible.
Or, like, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
You would think that would, like, have been out, because it's, like,
yeah.
Lion King.
But I think it probably went in the vault, because, like, what is it, like, 25 years or something
like
that?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Like, Lion King is... Lion King's mad old. Yeah. Or maybe it's at least...
Well, think about it.
It's 17 years old?
Okay, right.
Maybe. Pinocchio is 1940.
Right. Yeah.
I was going to say I saw it in the movie theater as well.
And the play several times when I was young.
Yeah.
So that means it had to be important when I was young, and I'm not young anymore.
Oh, well, the play is not super old. I feel like. Yeah.
It had to be of relevance. You know, the movie had to be of relevance in order to be a play.
Right, right.
You know? Yeah. And I was like 12 when I saw the play. So it's just weird.
Yeah.
Listen, Pinocchio holds up. It's great. And it's funny because I don't remember what it was from when I was kid. You remember certain things, but I'm watching it and like the whole story is he's got to be a good boy and that's how he'll become real by going to school. And the way that he's tempted is by joining the theater, which I think is hilarious. Oh. Like that's like the dark side that he's tempted to become like a bad kid. It's like a life of an actor. And I was like, yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. Because yeah, you're lying. That's why. So, Dara, how was your week?
I had a great week. Much better than last week. Last week I had my shit auctioned on storage. Yay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's okay. It's good to release stuff. And I don't know if I would have ever released a lot of stuff. So it's good to, like, you got to let things go in order to get stuff. I just got a full scholarship to Magnet Theater. Thank you.
Wow. Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. So I'm very excited about that. I just got the email today.
Congratulations.
I got a phone call from an agent today. So
congratulations.
Yeah, if that storage stuff had to go in order to get things moving in my life, then so be God.
Well, well, the week before the storage, we were on a show together.
And I won the competition.
And I was a judge. The judge show, I judged, and she won the competition.
Yes,
you're looking at Aragona's 2017 Broadway Comedy Club winner, right?
Yes,
here.
Absolutely.
Nice. Dara Jemai.
Yes, thank you very much. I had so much fun in that competition.
Yes.
And I'm going to be doing another show with John, who's very nice.
Oh, yeah. I love John. That's my boy.
Yeah, he's great. But yeah, competition. And that was my second competition that I won in a week. So yeah, things are in ebbs and flows.
Yep.
Taking life one step at a time.
That's how it goes,
feast or
man.
Famine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's been like struggle 17, but it's in a good way. So yeah, I'm happy one day at a time. And I'm just happy to be here.
It has been like struggle 17. It's been like a weird year.
Yeah.
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 Altogether, just a weird year. Weird. Just like, okay, we're alive. Okay.
Right. Oh.
Yeah. Step at a time. We can do this together.
So, Rodney, how was your week?
My week was good. It was just working the 9 to 5. I got like a new job. So
congratulations.
Thank you. So I'm working at a restaurant that's like attached to the W, so it's really fancy schmancy.
Ooh.
But then also still like working the bartending gig that I'm like working. So, you know, I'm on like double number 3 this week. So another one tomorrow, you know, life of a hustler.
Yeah. Getting that money.
You know, making that money. So. And then Marissa books me on her show, so.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm going to be hosting.
Yeah.
Fashionably Funny.
Fashionably Funny.
Yes, we've got a Fashionably Funny coming up September 29th at Broadway Camp Road, 10 p.m.
Doing it. Marissa, how was your week?
My week was good. You know, it was a lot of, you know, like work and then like back end, like production stuff, like, you know, like booking. Cause I book like a fiend. Like, you know, it's like, I like sometimes I forget. It's just like, oh yeah, I'm booking 76 shows a year. Yeah. So, you know, it sometimes I'm just like, stop emailing me 5 minutes. Like, so, you know, I kind of needed that, like, Labor Day. I just kind of, like, Labor Day weekend, I just kind of hid. So, like, I was just like, I'm not talking to anyone about anything. I'm just going to be in my house. So that was, like, good and relaxing. And then this week was just, catching up and just a lot of work. And I found a new therapist.
Oh, nice. That's awesome.
Nice.
So I last week I broke up with my therapist on text.
Good for you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Good for you. So because then, you got to do that sometimes.
Yeah, he deserved it.
Yeah.
And yes. So now this, I found a new one, so I'm going to start that next week. We'll see how it goes.
Oh, so you haven't had your, so you don't know yet if you.
Yeah, I don't know if we're compatible.
So it's a first date.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a first therapy date.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is important. My I had a therapist and he would always be on the phone during our sessions, texting.
Oh.
Yeah, in a way it felt like a neglectful relationship, you know?
See, like
if I
was
wanted
having
a man
issues.
Not to listen to me, I would just have like a boyfriend and I'm paying
I was
you.
Just I already did that with
and
my girlfriend.
Right. Listen to me.
Yeah.
And my problem.
Oh man.
And he's like, "Uh-huh, yeah. Sure. Keep on going." Oh, wow, that's crazy.
Like, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I wish you well with your therapist.
Yeah, I had that kind of problem. He was like taking phone calls, and it's like some of them were like patients, some of them was his wife, and it's just like, it's like, no, that's fine. I will pick it up. I'll pick it up from the grocery store on my way. And okay, all right, I got, you know.
And you would think that the wife of a therapist would understand. Like, my husband's at work. Seriously. I can't really call him right now.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
Like, she would know that.
Yeah.
Like, she would call on the 10, you know what I mean? Or on the 5.
Exactly.
Yeah. I know you only have 3 minutes, babe.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Or here's when your lunch break is. That's when the call's going to happen.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
That, and then, like, I would get there and, like, be on time for my session. He's like, oh, I got to go get something to drink. And he'd go get a coffee and come back. Like...
Oh my god, yeah.
It's just amazing to me that nothing that anybody does anymore has enough of their attention that they can just focus on that one task. You know, like people are like crashing trains because they're texting while driving a train, like driving and texting. Like, I remember when I was a kid, there was this argument about whether or not they should have daytime running lights on cars.
Mm-hmm.
Like 24 hours, like your car always had headlights on. And the idea was if the lights are on, you're going to notice the car. And my friend, we were arguing this in class, and he goes, you already don't notice the car. How are you going to notice the lights? And it's like, it makes me think about now. It's like, we're driving these, like, metal death machines, and that's not enough to capture our attention, that we have to find another thing to do while we're doing it. Like, you could kill a school of children in 30 seconds driving a car, but God forbid you don't check your Instagram at the same time. Like,
I mean,
nobody can focus on anything anymore. It's crazy.
Right.
The funniest thing is though, like, people in the respect of driving, I don't drive. I drink too much to drive. But
yes.
At least you know.
I like to Uber.
Right.
Everywhere.
Cheers. Cheers to living in New York.
At least you know.
Right.
Having
that option. Absolutely.
At least you know.
But yeah, I feel like people are always doing crazy things when they're driving. You know, like, I've seen people do their nails and like makeup and eating.
No, like watching people like when they're like doing like eyeliner and it's just like I can't like friggin' talk and do eyeliner without poking my eye.
Exactly.
Like, how are you driving and doing eyeliner? Like, if I'm doing my eyeliner, it's like, hold on, eyeliner. Like, you know, I can't even keep both eyes open at the same time.
In
I'm
order
like,
to do it.
Like, yeah.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
A couple years ago, I was driving down the New Jersey Turnpike in like weekend summer traffic, and a dude was playing a flute with both hands while driving. I swear to God.
Oh.
He was steering with
his knees.
It was amazing. It made me so happy to see this guy. This guy was just playing.
You're like, please don't kill me.
It was like I couldn't stop laughing. It made me so happy.
Was
to see
he on his way to an audition or something?
I have no
like,
idea.
Why is it that important that you got to practice?
He was
right
sitting in the same
then.
Traffic as everybody else. He just found. Like, he just found a way.
Flute.
Oh my god. That's crazy.
Oh, man.
So, Peter, have you ever had any near-death experiences?
I feel like I have them all the time. Let's see. When I was 17, I totaled a car and walked away from it with my sister in the car. That was pretty crazy.
Wow.
It's funny. I gave a speech at her wedding because I never got along with her. Growing
up. Is that
why
you tried to kill her?
No, I wasn't trying to kill her. It's funny because I, you know, my father had all these rules when I got my driver's license because I'm the oldest son. It's like, you got to drive your siblings to school. Son. You can't drive at night. You can't drive when it's raining, all this stuff. And he had this old, like, Mercedes, like, diesel car. Like, built like it was a 1985. It, like, like, diesel, like, crazy car. And I spent the whole day cleaning it for him. And I was like, Dad, I cleaned the car. Can I take the car out? And he's like, all right, you can take your sister to color guard practice, whatever it was. And we, like, a couple minutes from the house, we spun out of control and flipped down an embankment and flipped right side up again. And I gave this speech at her wedding because, like I said, I never really liked her and got along with her. But in that moment, like, really, like, time stands still. And the only thing that I remember thinking is, dear God, don't let my sister get hurt. For the first moment, it dawned on me, like, oh, I like this person. I actually care about her.
But, I don't like my sister, but I love her.
Yeah, no, it was weird because I was such a like a jerk, like being like a teenage older brother, you know. But yeah, so that happened. Walked away from that, and years later, I fell through a trap door at my restaurant job.
Oh,
yeah, it was crazy. Literally, I used to work at this place where it was a small place, and there was curtains that let you into the kitchen, and they had a trap door that led to the prep kitchen. It was so small that in the middle of service, they'd have to open the trap door, run downstairs, and the trap door was basically the whole length of one wall of the kitchen. So they would put a bin, like where you put the dirty napkins, and if you felt the bin behind the curtain that said, don't go in because the trap door's open. Well, I went in there with a handful of plates, and by the time I felt the bin, I also felt myself falling straight down.
Oh, wow.
Like 10 feet, and it was crazy. Like, I literally remember, I somehow landed with my feet in front of me, like I was sitting on the floor. And, you know, they came down, everybody was like going crazy. I'm like, no, I'm fine. I wiggled my toes, wiggled my fingers. And then, ambulance came, they took me to the hospital, CAT scans, x-rays, nothing. They couldn't find anything wrong with me.
Oh, perfect.
But, it's funny because the prep cook that was there who, like, saw it, the accident happened, who was probably more scared of anyone because he actually, like, I don't even remember the actual accident. Like, he witnessed it and he would always joke with me. He goes, I don't know how many more lives you got left. You know, you keep. But it was crazy. It was a crazy, crazy thing. And then, like, 2 months later, a guy rear-ended me on the highway, and I almost went into the wall right by the Newark airport.
Oh, wow.
And, like, in a split second, had to, like, catch myself. And it's funny because, you know, the fall, like, there was nothing I could do. Like, I'm just falling. That's it. But this was, like, I had a second. Like, I got to do something here. And I somehow managed to get the car in control, pull over the side of the road. And this still kills me to this day. This old guy gets out of his car, checks his bumper first.
Oh.
And I was like, you almost killed me. Like, I want to worry about whether or not I'm alive first. Literally went to look at his bumper first. And then he said, he goes, here, write down your information for me. I'm not wearing my glasses, so I can't see what it says on my insurance.
Oh, wow. That's why crazy. You probably hit me in the first place.
Yeah, yeah.
I got into an accident, too, where I was driving, and then a guy decided to, like, make a left-hand turn from the right-hand lane. I was in his blind spot. My car completely flipped over in oncoming traffic. Jeez. It was, like, upside down.
Oh, wow.
And I had to, like, get out of my seatbelt, and, like, a trucker, like, came over and, like, got, like, the door open for me, and then my car, like, ended up in flames. It was
Jeez.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wow. Crazy, yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, but I got out. But, like, at least the guy gave me a hug that hit me.
It's the least thing
you do. Oh, my God, I'm so sorry. Marissa, you had a near-death experience, too.
I've had a couple. Like, I've definitely had a couple. I was actually, I mean, near-death as in dead. I flatlined twice in one day.
What?
From pistachio ice cream.
Oh,
so I had anaphylactic shock, and so I ate the ice cream, and I started not feeling well, and the whole room went sideways. I fell off my chair, and my roommates all thought I was playing around, and they're like, "Oh, Marissa," and I was just like, "No, like I can't. Like my throat feels weird."
And then, like, my tongue started swelling, and I didn't have any, like, antihistamines with me, but they were, like, in my apartment. But they took me back home, and then, like, I only had the pill, and I didn't have a liquid, and I couldn't swallow it. So then they called 911, and, like, by that time, I was kind of, like, in and out of consciousness. And so the last thing I remember is, like, the EMTs got there. They put an oxygen mask on me. And my roommate, she went with me into the ambulance, and so they gave me the shot of epinephrine, but they gave me too much, and it gave me a heart attack, and I flatlined.
Oh, my God.
And so then they revived me, like, in the ambulance with the paddles, and then I came back, too, but my heart was still irregular, so then they gave me something to slow my heart down, and then they gave me too much of that, and I flatlined again, and then they, like, revived me, and then finally got my heart regulated. And so then I woke up in the hospital, like, 3 days later. And
oh, my God.
Yeah. So, and it's funny because, like, my roommate from college, I went to her baby shower a couple of years ago, and someone made brownies. And so there was a batch of brownies with no nuts and a batch of brownies with nuts. And so then she was just like, who made the brownies? And this one lady is just like, oh, I made the brownies. She's like, did you use the same baking pan with the ones with the nuts as you did without the nuts? And then she's like, yes. And then she's like, okay, Maris, I wouldn't eat the brownies with no nuts, but if you really feel like you need to have a brownie, let's have an exit strategy. Okay, we've got a car in the front. The hospital is 10 minutes away. And she's like, and I'm like, dude, let's relax. I won't eat the brownies.
Just
like,
it's not worth it.
Well, it's funny because I've worked in restaurants for a long time, and the allergy thing, I like it when people, like, there's people who have, like, the card, and they, you know, you present it to the chef. Like, that to me says, like, this is a person who takes responsibility. This is a serious issue, and they're in charge of their life. But then I also deal with, like, parents who, like, you know, they want to get dessert for their kid who has a peanut allergy. And I say, you know, there's peanuts in the room. Is that going to affect them? They're like, I don't know. Do you think it's bad? I'm like, don't put your life or your child's life in my hands.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, I'm a stranger, and you don't even have my undivided attention. Like, right. What are you doing?
No, what really gets me are the assholes that will tell you after they put your food in, oh, yeah, does that have nuts in it? Like, fool.
Yeah.
your food's here. Like,
yeah. I've always thought, I've never done this, but I think about writing like a pamphlet for guests to how to get the most out of their restaurant experience. Because I feel like we in the industry, we basically lie to the guests and tell them everything that they do is okay and whatever you want. And then we talk about them behind their backs. But we should like I think you literally should tell people like the stupid shit that they do that makes them not get the best.
We've talked about this on here. I feel like there needs to be a class that you take in like high school where it teaches you how to do at a restaurant. Restaurant etiquette, things that you do, things
that's
that you
why
do
you have
not
parents.
Do. Well, like, but then the parents act the fucking fool at the restaurant
yeah,
too.
Yeah, not even that.
So,
like, it doesn't matter who you are. You could be an attorney, like a corporate lawyer, whatever, and you just don't know how to act. Do you know what I mean? Like sometimes I'm like, do you get through the whole day like this? Like,
yeah.
What
it's really
like,
funny that we're talking about like acting in restaurants and how to act in restaurants because my near-death experience ended in a restaurant with my parents. Well, I was shipwrecked and thought I was going to die. And the entire boat was just like submerged with water. And my mom's trying to use the water pump to get it out. And the cabin that I had been sleeping in is completely filled with water at this point. And it was like, oh, we're going to die because we can't get this water pump out. And then the air horn she tried to use did not work. And I had like, I was taking swim lessons and I was like, maybe I can save everyone. I was like, no, I can't. So then my father got the boat to Hart Island and my mom scaled the wall. Like it was a cliffhanger. It was like a motherfucker. Like, yeah. I didn't think I was going to be able to get up there. And she just grabbed my arm and like flung my entire body up there. And she says that she didn't do this, but she turned around to my father and she's like, you for yourself. It's like, I got my baby. Exactly. I got my baby. You do what you do. I don't care.
You got me in this in the first place.
Exactly.
You know I didn't want to get on that boat.
Exactly. Like, the rescue boat came and got us, and we ended up going to this restaurant, and we were just all dirty, and my parents ordered 2 double bourbons, and I order, like, 12, like a dozen oysters, and we just sit there really dirty in a restaurant. And I'm like, my parents would normally never let me do this, but we just lived, so.
Right.
I love the
two double burgers.
Where were you?
Wait, that's
right in like city, right around City Island. Like,
oh wow,
yeah, oh wow.
We used to just rent a boat, and my father, you know, had sailing lessons, and luckily knew enough to get us out of there.
Did you guys go sailing after that?
Again? Not for a long time.
Right? That's how she left. I'm like, oh, you the one with the sailing lessons?
Yeah,
huh?
Not for
now
a
you
long
gonna figure
time.
It out.
And then also,
I told you, hire a captain.
Exactly. I need several sailors on the boat. But my storage facility, I was actually robbed at gunpoint in the storage facility,
oh,
too.
Oh,
that was
God.
Another reason where I was just like, you know what? Keep this shit. I'm done with this place. Because this dude definitely walked in with a gun and robbed us all. Well, I was able to slide my money back in my pocket, but he definitely robbed the money from public storage. So,
well, you just made me think. It's like when I got into the accident when I was 17, the accident was me alone. There was no other cars involved. But for years after that, I would have, like, I'd be on the highway, and I would have, like, sort of, like, visions, like, anxiety of getting into an accident with another car.
Mm-hmm.
And my accident had nothing to do with being on the highway with other cars. But, like, that's how it manifested itself. I actually, now that I think about it, I went backpacking in Europe when I was 19. And, some people in my family were like, oh, what if something happens? So I'm like, no, I want to do this thing. And, I was on a train from Paris to Nice. It's an overnight train. You sleep on the train. And like 2 hours into it, I started getting like really bad pain in my side. Ended up having to get off the train and go to the hospital. It turns out I had a kidney stone.
Oh, wow.
And so I spent the day, spent 2 days in the hospital in Dijon, France. And like my mom was calling the embassy. She was calling airlines. She was going to go over there. It's funny. I think about it. Every time I talk to my dad on the phone, I'm like, no, Dad, I'm okay. Like everything's fine. I'm just sitting here in the hospital. But every time I talk to my mom on the phone, I'm like, Mommy, I'm all alone in the hospital.
Yeah.
Someone save me.
But I didn't go back. Like it took me years to like travel again. Because of that experience, you know?
That's what my dad says. One of his biggest regrets with the whole boat thing is not putting me on a boat immediately. He's like, I should have had you on a boat the very next day. Because when I got into a car accident, he said, he was like, get in the car right now. Because we're not going to have that happen for you where you have this thing where you can't get. He's just like, you got to, if something happens, you got to tackle that bitch again right away.
Well, this is all comedy gold talking about death and stuff, but this actually makes me think.
Yo,
about
you gotta laugh at it though. When I was in the armed robbery, I was writing jokes on the way home. I was like, you know, there's sexier places to die than public storage. I mean, I like the brain just kept on going because I was like, I'm alive. I have a comedy show tonight, and the only thing that I'm really living for right now is to get on stage. So, like, I'm happy to be alive, and this is all material.
I got robbed at gunpoint, too, in L.A.
Really?
And it was just like...
It's like the movie.
It's like,
what the fuck? Where are my lines?
Happening to me? Like, what the fuck? I called my dad crying, like, oh, my God, buy me that plane ticket home now. And he's like, Rodney, relax. Like, it's going to be okay.
Yeah. Like, where is this public storage?
Oh, Kingston and St. John. Fuck y'all. Public storage on Kingston and St. John. Y'all can suck
it. I got
mugged
without a gun, but I didn't. Like, I used to live in Jersey.
What part?
Elizabeth. That's where I'm originally from, but then we left.
I'm from Teaneck.
Okay, yeah. So I'm from Elizabeth, and then my family moved to actually a farm by the Poconos. But then for a couple years, I lived back in Elizabeth at my grandma's house, and I, you know, like old Italian neighborhood, and I was walking at night, and in the neighborhood, I felt safe. Like, I had just actually gone through the worst part of Elizabeth, which is right by the train station. But now I'm in the neighborhood, and I'm like, I'm listening to a podcast. I have, like, no situational awareness at all. Like, talking about people who are not paying attention when they're driving. Like, I'm sitting there, and kid walks past me and looks at me, smiles at me, and goes, oh, did I scare you? And I go, no, I just didn't realize anybody was behind me. And he just seemed like he was okay. You know how you assess threats? He seemed like he was okay. And he kept walking. And then I turned around and there was two more guys behind me. And I was like, oh, now I know what's going to happen. And they didn't, you know, and people were like, did they pull a gun? Did you fight? I'm like, no. Like, listen, I've talked to enough people and I've heard enough things. It's like, what's the best case scenario here? I get my nose broken. I get my ribs broken. Like, I'm not going to fight three guys. I had $30 in my pocket. They're like, you have an iPhone? I was like... Actually, I have the BlackBerry, and I think it's a superior product. I don't know why anyone's getting excited about that. They literally didn't take my BlackBerry. I ran home.
That's hilarious.
I ran home, and I reached in my pocket, and my BlackBerry was still in my pocket. I was like, oh, shit. But and still, like, talking about, like, the trauma, for months after that, I would get, like, flashes of anger. Uh-huh. I would, like, clench my fist in the middle of doing something else because of that remembering that experience. It's crazy how that stuff lives with you.
It does. It's
but, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I was saying, like, with resilience, I'm plug in a book that I'm reading right now. There's this book called Anti-Fragile. It's by this guy, Nassim Nicholas Taleb. I think I'm saying that right. And I like, I'm always like an evangelist for whatever, I'm like, whatever movies I love or books I love. And it's very much about like being, basically he invented this term anti-fragile to mean things that are actually get stronger from stress.
Yeah.
So there's fragile things that break because they're fragile. There's things that are resilient and they can withstand stress, like a house that's built to withstand an earthquake, say.
Yeah.
But then there's things that actually get better with stress. Like what you were saying, it's interesting.
Like a diamond.
Yeah. What you're saying about your father's point about, I think one of the problems in today's society is that we think that we have to protect people and children, especially from stress and from bad things happening. Mm-hmm. And if anything, we have to teach them how to work through that stuff so that they can be strong.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Again, comedy gold. I'm just throwing out nuggets.
There. So now, Dara,
yes.
I know you're a comic like the rest of us. And are you single or are you dating?
I'm professionally single.
You're professionally single?
Hey, or, you better be a pro.
Okay. I got 401k in this bitch.
So now, do you like use apps at all or?
No.
Okay.
Uh-oh. My thing is, I'm not an online shopper. I'm a tangible shopper. So if I can't buy shoes online, I can't buy dick online. It just isn't gonna.
Girl, you gotta get into dick online.
I've tried. But I did actually learn that people are using. I did a video called Fuckboy Commandments, and I did actually learn that people are putting that video in their Tinder profile, which I fully 100% support.
Uh-oh.
So, yeah.
Is there streaming dick that you can pay like $8 a month for?
I wouldn't pay for dick. At all.
No. So now, do you find that it's more difficult to date being a comic, or did you think that it was more difficult to date before you started doing comedy?
I think the struggle has been about
the same.
Yeah. I think with comedy, I just found like a lifestyle that matches what I was kind of already doing, and now I just have a really good excuse for it, you know? So I feel like any guy who wasn't okay with what I was doing before isn't going to be okay with what I'm doing now. But it does take something, you know, and I haven't been in a relationship while I've been in comedy. I haven't been in a relationship since like 2015. But yeah, I think it really takes some level of understanding, and you know, there's a lot of late nights and there's a lot of, you know, people talking, and it's going to take someone who's confident in you and the relationship and what you have, and not also feel threatened or outshined, because I've dealt with that with guys, and that's just like, ugh. And they're like, ooh, you're too shiny, I'm going to dull you. And I'm like, bitch.
No, you're not.
Yeah.
Right.
You're not.
Right. Hello. No, I'm this. Do you tell them immediately, or do you like...
Yeah. I'm a comedian. No. But if it comes up in conversation, yeah, it's not something I keep a secret.
I think that it's more difficult because, like, I've been in relationships before and after, and I've been, you know, doing comedy for a minute. And I find that I've had relationships with comics and relationships with non-comics. And you would assume that the ones with, the relationships with the comics would be a little bit smoother because they understand because they're doing it, but it's not the case.
No.
It's not the case at all. And then, like, the relationships with, like, non-comics, it's just kind of, like, to your point where they're just like, you know, like, why are you out so late? Like, well, who are all these people? And your friends are so weird. And, like, you know what I mean?
True.
If I had a daughter who wanted to be a comedian, I would tell her to marry rich. I think like the easiest thing to do is just to get, like, I think that, I don't know, part of me thinks that like
if marrying rich was easy, I would have
been right. I already told my father I was going to do that.
I think the perfect match is like squares and artists. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's like too much artist is no good, too much square is no good. Like, I think there has to be like a balance.
I think
there
have to be creative squares. You know, they have to kind of be, I agree, there needs to be like a balance there, a yin and a yang, as I heard it is. Apparently it's not yang, it's yang.
Uh-oh.
I just learned that. I don't know if that's true or not. But yeah, there has to be that kind of balance, but I feel like that person still needs to have, like, at least for me, has to have a sense of creativity.
Yeah.
You know, it can't just be like, numbers.
Or appreciation, you know? It's funny, because, like, I've had, you know, millions of these conversations, I'm sure you guys have too, it's like, being an artist and making a living are two different things. Yeah. And I think I think we're kind of spoiled because we just happen to be living in a time period where, you know, the last 50 years we've seen artists make millions, tens, hundreds of millions of dollars. But if you look at like history, like
artists are also different from creatives, though. Yeah. I just want to make that distinction.
No, and I there's definitely a whole, you know, a whole broad spectrum of different kinds of people who either appreciate art or make art or want to do it as a hobby or do want to do it as their life. But this idea that you, like, I think we put a lot of pressure, I'll speak for myself, I know I'm going to put a lot of pressure on myself that not only do I have to be an artist and live like an artist, but I have to make my living as an artist and I have to be, and if, you know, you use that yardstick, like, well, look at, you know, Brad Pitt is making blah, blah, blah. But it's like, if you look at most of history, like Michelangelo, you know, wasn't, you know, living it up. A lot of these guys, like, they died, you know,
like
destitute. Or, like, I always look to, like, Herman Melville. Like, wrote Moby Dick, was a failure. Like, I think he was actually the customs inspector down here in the port. Lived 30 years, thought he died, like, wanting to be an artist. And then, like, 100 years later, people are like, oh, that book, Moby Dick, is, like, a masterpiece. But to him and to his friends and to his family, he was a guy who was playing at being a novelist. You know what I mean?
I just kind of wanted to say, what is your distinction between a creative and an artist?
I think we're all creative, right? And we all, I would say artists, but that's a fucking lie. But we all have the opportunity each day to create what we want our life to look like, right? In any instance, we can create a good day or we can create a bad day. And we literally have the paintbrush to do that on a daily basis.
The secret.
Right. Yeah, kind of. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why I say creative, because, you know, I could date an accountant, but he could have a way of helping me create an Excel document that is going to have the entire document, like, roster of every agent in New York City, and that's going to help me create something. You know, that's that kind of the creative that I'm talking about. There's the artist that actually takes, like, a medium, and they're like, okay, this is my intention, this is what I want to create. They're kind of one and the same to that, but I didn't want, what was your name again?
Peter.
When Peter was making his point, I didn't want it to make it sound like when I said I want to make sure the person I'm dating is a creative, I didn't want it to be lost in the sauce if I meant he had to be like a painter or like a poet, or a fellow comedian, because to your point, that does not necessarily
work. No, it doesn't work. I mean,
So I think we're along the lines of saying basically the same thing, but for me, there's just that little bit of a distinction between creative and an artist. Like,
all right.
And another thing I wanted to say to what you said was, you know, so many people, and like true artists, they live for their art and they live to create and they live in the exclusion or like an outlier of what people think is norm or society okay. And they live that way forever. And I think the hard part is finding someone who's like, that's cool. I want to be with that.
Yeah.
No matter how weird it is, no matter how crazy it is, just kind of like riding your wave of creativity.
Well, it's,
and that's hard to find sometimes.
It's difficult because they don't really, like, those like true artistic types that are in that like another level, their own wavelength, like marching to the beat of their own drum. Mm-hmm. I think that it's impossible to have a relationship with them because they're in a relationship with their art. Like, they don't need another partner. Like, they have their life partner. Like, their art is their partner. So it's kind of like you need to be willing to say to yourself, like, I'm okay being second to everything.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know that many people that are okay with that or should be okay with that. Like, I think if you have a healthy self-respect, you shouldn't be okay with being second unless they have a kid or something like that.
I absolutely agree, but this is also a part of the conversation of just being able to create what you want it to look like, because it could be anything. You know, the person who's going to choose that person could have their own, they could have a whole other life, but just really want to love that person and be a partner to that person. And you're right, there's a minute amount of people who would even want to put themselves in that position. And I'm not saying lose yourself for that person's art, but yeah, that person that we're talking about, that is that artist, like, I'm not my art. Yeah. I want to smell blue. Like, that person, you know, I don't want to say that that person is incapable of being loved.
I ate blueberries. Smell it.
Exactly. I need you to smell this. I ate blueberries. Tell me what it smells like. I always like to think that there is like a purple hippopotamus club for everybody. You know what I mean? And there might just have one person in that club in every state, but that's that tribe for you. So I don't want to say that that person who wants to smell blue can't be loved. There's someone, but that person's probably not even in playing the game to find that person. So it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. I'm going to say they can't be loved.
I want everyone to be loved, flower child.
Okay. But I think that's another thing. So like if you look historically, like look at these people's lives, like what did their lives look like? Do you know what I mean? It's not, a lot of it is not, we make romantic notions. I'm always like, my big obsession is with time. Cause like, even if like, obviously my dream is to be a full-time performer and filmmaker, whatever that means. But it's like, what do I do with the rest of my time? Like, I'm always curious, like, what people do with the rest of their time. Because a lot of, like, novelists say they write maybe 3 hours a day. And then the rest of the day, they're doing other stuff. So it's like, we remember them as artists, or we think of ourselves as artists. But the fact is, life is a lot of other stuff, too. And I think that's where the craziness is. Or that's where the people who can't, like, learn to, like, you know, oh, I'm a painter, and I'm a great painter, but my kids need my attention, too. Or my wife needs my attention too. Like, that's where you hear these crazy stories.
Peter, how have you been dating since you were a comic?
Well, I have a kind of a weird comedy story because I did stand up for the first time when I was 8 years old.
Oh wow!
In a talent show, and it's funny because like I had these vivid memories of this. I don't know what gave me this inclination that I should do this. I was like a shy kid in school, and I just decided I was going to do stand up. And I literally did it in front of the entire school, like in like an assembly. And I remember there was this girl that I had a crush on, but I would never like go up and say hello to her. Mm-hmm. And I would walk past her desk every day in class, and I'd just kind of look and walk to the back. And I did stand up, and like the next day, mind you, we were 8 years old. I see her, and she goes, "Oh, you were really funny, Peter." And I was like, I was on cloud nine. I'm like, what am I going to do about it? It's not like we're going to like start dating. We're 8 years old. Yeah. But then I didn't do it again for years, and I was always like kind of dipping my toes in. To stand up and just never committing. But I really, the last couple of years is when I've really been like gung ho, doing stand up. And I was in a serious relationship up until a few months ago, the whole time I was doing stand up.
Okay.
So that was tough, but it was also great. For one thing, I always had a plus one for every bringer. I was guaranteed at least one guest.
Yeah.
And, like she was interesting because she didn't know anything about comedy, was not interested in comedy, didn't know the world at all. And, you know, they would, like, put her on the front of the club, and then every comedian would, like, say stuff to her, like, doing crowd work, and then she would get pissed because she wouldn't know how to handle it, or she wore a fur coat to a show at Greenwich Village Comedy Club one time.
At Greenwich Village Comedy Club?
She stood out. And
what is wrong with that?
Well, it's funny, you were saying about, like, someone, like, trying to dull the other person.
Like, I'm pretty sure I've done that. What is wrong with that?
Right. Like, I smell blue.
I smell blue.
She was a very kind of glamorous person, and me like it's one of the things that was great about us is that we lived for a while on the Upper East Side, and then we lived in Spanish Harlem, where I still live now. And one of the things I loved about her, and what was great about her, is we would go to this hotel on Madison Avenue, like super posh, and have like a $20 cocktail, and then take a cab to Wendy's on 117th Street. And Third Avenue, and have like a number one value meal at 2 o'clock in the morning.
I love that
back and forth. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of the things I love about New York City is New York is grimy and glamorous.
Like, that's just New York.
Her wearing a fur coat in Greenwich Village Comedy Club of all places, like she stood out.
This is why I'm confused, because you are describing my life.
Okay, no, I mean, I'm not saying
you want to date Peter.
I'm available. I don't know if I'm emotionally available.
Right, connection. Exactly. I'm like, I'm ready to wear my furs.
But
Peter, don't come for me. They're vintage.
Yeah.
They'd be dead anyway, okay?
No, but it's funny because I was trying to bounce because I was working and doing shows, and we started fighting, and then we broke up. And one of the things she said is that, you know, when you're not working, you're at comedy clubs, and either way, you don't have enough time for me.
Right.
And I felt this, like, stress because I was like, I love her. I love the idea of being in a relationship with her. But she's kind of right. Like, right now, like, one of my regrets is that, you know, I'm not 10 years further along in my comedy career. Like, if I had started at 21 or 20, I feel like I'd be, you know, at a place where I wouldn't have to work 50 hours a week and then do stand-up for every other waking hour that I have. And I would maybe have more time to, like, really be serious in a relationship.
I don't know if that's logical, though, because there's, like, because, like, there's a lot of comics that I know that have been doing stand-up for 20, 25 years that still are not making their living doing stand-up.
Yeah, no, I know that.
But, like, do you feel like your stand-up career has benefited from you being single?
Oh, I got new material right away. I mean, I used to talk about the relationship, and now I talk about the breakup. And it's funny, that's another thing. She, like, one time she's like, I don't like that you talk about me on stage. Like, this is my life is not for public consumption. And I was like, okay. So then she invited her sister and her sister's boyfriend to a show that I did.
Oh.
And afterwards I got off stage, and she goes, you didn't talk about me one time. And I was like, yeah, you told me.
Just tell me not
to. She goes, but I had company. Like, of course they're going to want to see you making fun of me. Like, they came to the show because they're my family. I'm like, I can't win.
Well, like, I know that for, like, comics that I've dated, like, we've definitely either agreed to do that we would do material about each other as long as it was funny and not mean. Or we've agreed that we wouldn't do material about each other. Like, you know, it's always been, like, one or the other. But, like, I used to have, like, one comic that I dated, and we'd be booked on a lot of the same shows, and we would kind of, like, our fights would continue on stage, and we'd be, like, joke fighting at each other. And, like, ooh. I think the two of us were, like, the only ones that knew, like, you know what I mean? It's, like, and so, like, you know, he would go up, and, like, he'd be, like, you know, talking, like, oh, like, my girlfriend's such a bitch, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, oh, yeah, my boyfriend, he's just, like, pissed off because he can't see his feet. Like, you know, and so it would be just, like, fight through our jokes, and it was
did
like
did you go home and have sex afterwards then?
I hope you had angry sex.
Yeah, that like angry sex, like I just got off a stage. Or no, because you couldn't see his feet.
Well, he usually thought he was having a heart attack.
Oh,
that one.
Yeah. My ex, like, I did two shows with like 2 hours in between or something, and again, mind you, she didn't know anything about comedy. Like, the whole thing, her whole experience in the comedy world was me bringing her to shows. She had no background in it at all. And we're walking from one club to the other, and she's like, you keep doing that joke. I told you not to do that joke. You actually need to work on new stuff because you don't fall into the same. I'm like, when did you become the comedy expert?
Right.
But, like, she got me, like, riled up. It felt like in Rocky III when, like, Apollo Creed's like, what's the matter with you, Rock? There is no tomorrow. Like, she was giving me this, like, pep talk. And the next show, like, I killed it because I was, like, so angry at her that I used the anger to fuel my comedy. So if anything, like, I kind of missed that. Like, right now I live alone. I don't have any drama in my life. I don't have another person to play off of in my private life. So, it actually deprives me of material in that way, I think.
Really? That's funny, because none of the guys that I've dated have actually made it, like, in a set. The Israeli and the Palestinian, they made it in, because that's based on real life, but I wasn't dating them, you know?
Yeah.
And someone actually said to me, they're like, I think you'll be a better comic when you have, a boyfriend and a family. I was like, what the fuck? Like,
what
does that even mean? But I don't, and at the same time, I don't know, because they could be right, because right now, it's just, like, my comedy is based on me walking through life, but I think when I have other, like...
You changing diapers and shit.
Yeah,
that's a whole nother...
Yeah, every day, I got shit in my hand and a wipe my face, like, I get
That I just think is like being sexist, but I just kind of
I agree.
Like,
thank you.
But like I feel like when you're having I feel like when I'm just finished a breakup or just getting over a breakup, that's when I have my best material, because I kind of feel like emotionally I need to be in an unsettled place to like perform well, because like when I'm happy, like I'm just like when I'm in the beginning of a relationship and everything is good, like I'm like a shit comic, because it's like I'm happy, I don't have anything to complain about. Hey guys,
it's great. Know? I just got a new relationship.
It's like I love everything, but like you know, but like when I'm just like, oh, fuck this motherfucker. That's when I'm like in my corner pocket of like my comedy. It's just like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm feisty.
Is that why tragedy makes the best comedy?
Yeah, I think so.
I think that's it. And that might be it. Cause well, I agree with that.
It's like you need that part of your soul where like you're injured but you're on the mend. It's like that soft scab that you know it's like ooh, gonna heal.
And see, that's why I didn't know if that man was wrong or not when he was like, when you're married and have children, because that just means that scab is right there.
That's not a soft scab. That is
it's
just
a hard scab that's permanent.
That's an open wound for 18 years.
Right. I'm just saying it could be mostly tragedy. Okay.
Well, I hate the truism that comedians are depressed and the comedy comes from depression. I don't think it's depression. I think it comes from a skewed perspective. And I used to have this, like, I used to talk to my friend that I used to work with, and she's like, your stories are always like about something bad happening to you. Like, it's always self-deprecating. Why are you always being so bad? I'm like, because it's funny. Like,
right.
There's nothing funny about, like, hey, I met this random girl. We hooked up. It was great. And then I went home. Like, there's nothing funny. But if I go on a blind date and she screws me over and then I get water all over myself and then she tells me she's leaving and then I see her back in the bar, like, after she thought I left, like, there's funny to that story. And it's it's weird because I think
that you're that girl, huh?
All creativity comes. It's not depression.
It's
life going crazy and things and being able to stand outside of stuff and laughing at it because the alternative is to cry about it.
Yeah. Did you at least approach her like, oh, okay, I see you.
Oh yeah, yeah. So we were set up on a date. She was, like, super, like, into it, too. And then she's like, oh.
So you thought.
Well, no. We talked on the phone. She was, like, really enthusiastic. This was years ago. And my friend was trying to put us together. And she's like, oh, I work in Soho. Why don't you meet me at this bar in Soho? And I was like, okay. And then last minute, she's like, oh, actually, I had to work late. So I'm at this bar on the Upper East Side. And I was like, well, that's weird. Why does working late have anything to do with you being in a completely different neighborhood? And it was one of those, like, Irish pubs where they have – you guys like the table tap on the table. Do you know what I'm talking about? Where it's, like, five pitchers of beer in a tube so that you don't have to call the waitress over. And I see this table with this table tap. And I was like, don't be her. Don't be her. Don't be her. Way from that table. She's sitting at a four-person table with three other people. So I'm literally sliding up a chair. I'm a fifth wheel at my date. She asked me out on a date. And I sat down, and they had ordered food, and the food arrived when I got there.
Ooh.
And we're literally in a bar where you can't hear anybody speak. We talked for like 15 minutes, and she's like, yeah, I think, you know, I'm going to go home. I was like, okay. I was like, well, can I at least walk you home? She goes, nah, that's fine. I'm going to, like, so she goes, she's like, I'm going to go to the bathroom, and then I'm going to go home. And so she leaves me at the table with these strangers. So now I'm like, I don't know what to do. So my grand idea is I'm gonna go to the bathroom because I want to hide until she leaves because I literally don't know what to do. And in this like little tiny New York bar bathroom, the hand dryer was right above the sink. So as I'm washing my hands, it activates the hand dryer, which then blows all the water all over me. So now I'm soaking wet, hiding in a bathroom in a bar at the end of a terrible date. And I come out of the bathroom and she's sitting at the table again because she thought that I left.
Oh.
Yeah. And then I like a week later, I ran into her on the street. And she's like, oh, hey, how's it going? We should see each other. We should get together again and all this stuff. And I'm like,
No, we shouldn't, bitch.
No. So, yeah. So that was one of my early New York dating experiences. But again,
Where are you from, Peter?
New Jersey.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
We talked about that.
Yeah. New York City it was always my dream to live in New York, and here I am.
I've been playing this city like tramp since I was 14 years old.
Yeah?
Up in and out this bitch.
I was like, you ever seen Saturday Night Fever where he's like sitting on the bench dreaming about being in New York? Like, that was me. Like, my dream was to be in New York City.
I used to take dollar vans when I was 14.
Yeah.
To Dance Theater of Harlem. I did a summer intensive, and that started this love affair.
The funny thing is in that movie, he's in Brooklyn, dreaming about coming to Manhattan, and now people dream about moving to Brooklyn. Like, he needed to escape Brooklyn.
Oh, wow. Whole other thing.
He needed to escape Brooklyn.
You bring Sex and the City for people coming to New York.
White people being interested in Brooklyn.
But they
No, because
no, it's real.
And Miranda ends up with Steve, and they end up moving to Brooklyn.
Exactly. And you remember the reaction? It was like Brooklyn.
Yeah,
like,
Brooklyn's
it's
not that bad. It's affordable. It was like it was like the last episode of the series,
but
and they're just like,
because she's a lawyer, like.
Of course. Hello. You have to be lawyer. It's like, oh, let's just move to Brooklyn.
You can get a house out there.
No. Started the flow.
No, I'm saying like she's a lawyer that was married to.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I have a theory that like New York City has been cool for too long. Like 3 or 4 million people got to go. Like I love, like I'm staying, but like I want any, and whenever they're like, oh, this is terrible, the garbage, I'm like, good, just
go.
Keep.
Bye.
Yeah, see you later. Like somebody like on Facebook was like, some comedian who like lives somewhere else was like, can you tell me one good thing about New York City? I'm like, no, I don't want anybody else coming here. Like, go to Austin, go to Charlotte. I don't care. Go wherever else people are moving, but we don't need any of you. When people are lining up to like rent apartments in Bed-Stuy to pay like $2,000 a month for a studio in Bed-Stuy, there's too many damn people in New York City. Everybody go.
And it was Bed-Stuy.
Everybody get out.
20 years ago, Bed-Stuy, people were not lining up.
I paid $1,700 for a garden apartment with a backyard in Bed-Stuy in like 2004.
Wow.
I remember the first time I went on the Bowery.
And $2,000 for a studio. Safe. Yeah. I had a crazy ass landlord. That's the only reason I couldn't stay there. Mr. Barn.
Don't say his name. Lawsuit.
Public storage, fuck you. I will say that. Kingston and St. John. Fuck y'all. How about that?
Where is Kingston and St. John?
Brooklyn.
Okay.
Sex in the City, Brooklyn?
No.
Not yet.
No, no, baby.
That's Brooklyn.
Still Brooklyn.
Real Brooklyn.
Well, even like, because my family is from Sicily, and I've actually spent a lot of time in Europe, and so I talked to a lot of people, and it's like Sex and the City is still huge over there. And it, to me, like the humor is so New York centric. It's like, you guys don't even get the jokes, but they don't care. Like they love it because it's New York, because it's glamorous.
They saw the brunches and the yoga mats, and they were like, we're going.
People are still taking pictures outside of Carrie's house.
Like. Yeah. I had
245 73rd Street.
The real house is on Perry Street. In the show, it was like on 76.
It was on 73rd.
Yeah, 73rd.
But you are right.
Yes.
You are absolutely right.
It's crazy. But yeah, that stuff, like, it brings all these people to New York, and then you can't, you know.
And then the rent's too damn high.
Right. Can't get a decent bagel
anymore.
Sorry,
that's me. I'm from Wisconsin.
Are you really?
Yes.
Where in Wisconsin?
Milwaukee.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Love that. Yes, exactly.
My dream was always to, I want to move to New York and be an actor. And I became a comedian.
I wanted it. Yes. You're a Sex and the City fan.
Yes, absolutely.
Clearly. You see, you proved my point.
I actually decided to move to LA. I moved to LA, and then I was like watching Sex and the City with my roommate, and I was like, you know what? Fuck LA. Let's go to New York. You want to go to New York? She's like, fuck yeah, let's go. Here I am.
Like Dara, I've been rolling in the city since I was a teenager, because like I'm from Westchester, so like I'd come down here clubbing when I was like 15, 16, like my junior prom. We went to the Limelight, and it was RuPaul's birthday. And so just like three blocks of like drag queens just wrapping around the block. And like I just remember, like, you know, because we were in a limo, and so we all paid the limo driver to like get us into the club, because we were like, the youngest one with us was 14 and the oldest one with us was 17.
Yes.
And so, like, we paid off the driver, and, like, he gets us in the club, and then the boys are just, like, lined up on this balcony, and, like, we're just like, what are you guys looking at? They're like, no, it's okay, don't look. And we're like, what? So, like, we squeeze in, and there's, like, a girl, like naked dancing in a cage.
Yes!
And, like, yeah, and so then we're just like, oh, my God, like, she's naked. And, like, we go to the bathroom, the bathrooms are co-ed. Somebody's doing a line on the sink, and I'm just like, where are we?
Like, that is exactly my experience when I walked into the tunnel when I was 14.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
the experience.
Well, the tunnel lane, you had to go to the bathroom upstairs and then
and
had
the
white tile.
Doors.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the scene from Kids is in the bathroom. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
See, that's what made me scared about moving to New York was the movie Kids.
Oh,
I was like,
I'm thinking
Belly. Sorry. Kids, you're right. But Belly.
Because the white tile bathroom is the one in Kids.
Okay. The one, I just remember the one upstairs that had the fizzle doors.
Okay.
And I saw 2 feet under there. And, you know, then I didn't know what was going on. And now I understand they were making a baby.
Right, yeah.
Oh, man.
Or doing coke. I don't know. Yeah. Right. It was one of the
two. Or both.
Or both.
You know.
Which, hey.
Or they could have been having sex but unable to make a baby.
Exactly. Which is okay, too. Because Ooh. That's how I prefer my sex. But there were drag queens, and there was an old Chinese man with a strapless sequin dress dancing on the bar. I mean, I learned so much about life that night.
Did you go to the curfew parties?
Downstairs?
The side door, and you had to go through the jungle room?
Well, I just remember there was, like, a tarot card reader and a table, and then I went downstairs, and there was, like, this there were murals on the wall.
Yeah.
Like a hip hop room downstairs. I think there
was. That was like all the way downstairs.
Because I went on the wrong night. I went on Saturday. I didn't go on the flex day. That was Sunday.
Well, that was Sunday. But like I went through like the curfew side. So like the curfew, they had their own side door. And that was like the gay side of the club.
Mm-hmm.
And when you got in through that way, it was like a lot cheaper. I think it was like $5 to get in. But if you went through the main door, it was like $20. And then if you got in through curfew, you could go through the gay side of the club and the straight side of the club, but if you went through the straight side, you weren't allowed into the gay side.
Oh.
So like that was like our own, and like so me and my friends, like we would just like go on like the curfew side, and like we just basically like hold hands on the line, like, oh, we're lesbians, like, you know. You know, just like get in, it's like $5 or whatever.
Oh, that's
and they
awesome.
Had like the jungle room one. and then you could like go to the other side, and then the hip-hop room, you had to go through the main floor.
Yes.
Downstairs.
Yes.
And there was that long ass tunnel, and they had little weird sidebars and bathrooms.
Yes.
They had actual pay phones.
Yes.
And like, yeah. I was there.
Taking me back.
Wow. I was there.
Yes, my friend's mom, it was her sweet 16, and she paid for us to all get into the tunnel that night after dinner at Justin's, the now I think defunct Puffy restaurant. So,
she
paid money for us all to get in there, the $20, and we all were just underage and having a good time in the tunnel. It's shut down now. You can't take any action.
You said
against
Puffy.
The club.
Puffy.
Oh, Diddy. Whatever.
Diddy.
That's
back,
how all
back
the,
when he was Puffy.
Back when he was Puffy.
Right?
But we're going to have to take a quick break, you guys. But before we go, I want to give everyone time to plug their upcoming shows. Like, what do you have going on? Dara, when's your next gig? Where can people follow you on social media?
People can follow me on social media at Chocolate Gem with a J, on Instagram.
Gem, truly outrageous.
Exactly!
Truly outrageous.
And also my last name, Dara Jamat, on Facebook. And my next show is going to be Monday at Moe's in Fort Greene, 80 Lafayette. And I'll be volunteering with the Cinderblock Festival this weekend, so I'm very excited about that.
Cool.
And also Wednesday, Wednesday Comedy Workout. Please come come to the open mic. Any comments?
Where
out
is
there?
It?
That is 1165 Bedford, 211 Putnam. It's on the corner of Bedford and Putnam at Brooklyn House of Comedy, Inkwell Jazz and Comedy Club.
And Peter, where can everyone find you on social media? What's your next gig?
I don't know where my next gig is just yet, but if you follow me on Facebook at Peter Garaci, it's G-U-A-R-R-A-C-I, or on Instagram at Garaci. That's where I post all my information.
Cool. And we're going to take a quick break, you guys. We will be right back. This is Big Talkin' Brewskies. I'm Marissa Smith. See you in a few.
Oh, for you. Park.
Hey!
Barton Miss Camp Park. There was a great black shark.
Hey!
Mama was a rolling stone, she had to find her own. Things are going funny corner, she a carry things across the border. Red Alley for slaughter, six pitney for feed your honor. And everyone in this life has made mistakes, temptations pushed up in my face. Find it hard not to take a taste. Everyone in this life has made mistakes, temptations pushed up in my face. Find it hard not to take a taste. And they say, and they say, you should sell your soul for the fine life. But I say unto thee, don't let them steal your dignity. Don't let them rob you of your life. Wouldn't you rather be here? But we all want to live the fine life. Rock-a-bye hush, little baby, don't you say a word. Mama's gonna turn those tricks and buy you that mockingbird. So don't you say a word. Buy you that mockingbird. Don't you say a word. Buy you that mockingbird. So now what? What happens now?
A few beers, we're chatting. Pull up your chair, we're all relaxing. Any subject, we never dismiss. Big talking brewskis with Marissa Smith. Comedy, sex, relationships, war. Any subject, we got it in store. Big talking brewskis is coming in live. Crack one open, Marissa has arrived. Big talking brewskis with Marissa Smith. Yeah.
Hey guys, happy Friday. This is Big Talkin' Brewskis. I'm still Marissa Smith, and we are back. We've got Rodney Daniels with us.
What's up, guys? Happy Friday.
We've got new to the table, Paul Bennett.
Hey, everybody. Hi.
And Peter Garacci.
How you doing?
All right. Paul, how was your week?
It's good. Good. Good week. What did I do? I don't know. I'm not in a hurricane. That's always a, that's
this
always
is,
a good
thing. Yeah, that
that's
is,
awesome.
Yeah, I'm thinking positive. You
yeah.
Know? I don't know what I went to an open mic today.
That oh, cool.
It was not terrible.
Is it not terrible?
I know. You know what the cure for open mics is? Is fidget spinner.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm 43 years old and I love fidget spinners. Only for open mics though.
I haven't tried them because I feel like it's just like a trend thing and everybody's like just doing it.
I just bought it a few weeks ago. They're great.
Really?
They're great. You can survive any situation with one of those things. You just do it and you're good for a long time.
I feel like that's why I have Candy Crush though.
That's true. You don't have to pay attention as much.
Oh, with the fidget spinner?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm definitely more of like a Candy Crush in those situations. I'm just like crushing it. The fidget spinner, I just kind of feel like, I don't know. I got to look at something.
I mean, but you can do it without, like, looking at it, right?
Yeah.
I can't.
That's, like, the whole...
No, but, like, that's what I'm saying, is that the fidget spinner, like, I'm not going to look at my hand. Like, I like to look at something while I'm doing something.
Right.
Because, like, I'm just going to fidget spin and watch the mic. It's like, well, I could just be playing my Candy Crush and not looking at the mic and be occupied.
But you can look at it or you cannot. You could do tricks.
What kind of trick do you do with the fidget spinner?
Well, you try to get on different fingers. That's a cool thing.
Oh, really?
Oh. Yeah.
I didn't know that there was tricks involved.
Yeah, and you can move it. If you've ever tried.
There's always tricks involved.
No.
Marissa.
Well.
So much fun.
Tricks are for kids,
right?
It's the hacky sack of our generation.
I have no idea why schools ban. I mean, I've never been in. But if I was a teacher and I had a bunch of like ADD boys, like I'd be like, here's a fidget spinner for all of you guys. You know? And they would just be quiet and they'd just be fidget spinning and like. Life would be good. I don't know why they don't want him not to have fidget spinners.
I don't know. I don't know.
That does make a lot of sense. Yeah.
Would they be fighting over who has the like coolest fidget spinner?
See, that's why. Somebody would get beat up because they have the gold one.
Yeah. Well, they could. They have like uniform. They have school fidget spinners.
Oh yeah. Like everyone has to.
Everybody
have, like,
has
a boring
exact
ass
same.
Spinach.
Yeah, because yeah. That's what school
does. I was
going to
say spinach spinner.
Bye bye.
Fidget spinner 10 times fast.
Yeah.
Gluten free fidget spinner.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know. It makes your fidgeting much drier. Yeah. Now, have you ever been divorced?
If I've ever been divorced is a great way to say, yes, I'm divorced. That's a fun thing. It's like saying, have you ever been like
have you ever been pregnant?
Ever been to Paris? Yeah.
So now, how long have you been divorced?
5 years.
Okay.
Which is like, the biggest thing I learned is like the first 2 years is you're it's rough.
Well, how long were you married?
I was married 10 years.
Oh okay.
Yeah. And the best thing, like the best question women would ask would be like, how long are you divorced for? And if it was like under 2 years, you could tell her like, oh, I'll see you in a few, you know, goodbye.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was smart because you're just like a wreck. But like, but then some women don't ask and you're like, I don't know if I should tell you, but you know. Like, I'm still, but, you know, but after 2 years, it's like, it's magic. Someone's like, it's going to take 2 years. And it literally does. So, you know, after that, you're just like, yeah, I'm okay. I'm good. You know.
Okay.
Yeah. But I'm in a relationship now. It's going well.
Nice.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Yeah. How long is this relationship that you're in been?
About 3 years.
Okay.
So I did my 2 years and I got.
Oh,
and
right
like,
at the 2 year mark.
Yeah. Like, yeah. We met and, yeah.
Hi, can I say something to you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Someone just told me that it's time and a half. Like, after you get out of a relationship, it's time and a half that it takes for you to get over that relationship.
So that would be like 7 years.
I guess so. But so
no, it would be 15.
15
years. So you're quick.
Yeah.
So I heard it was halftime.
I thought it was half.
Yeah, I thought it was halftime. Yeah.
Yeah, like.
So, like,
maybe
if he
I
was.
I just padded that for my own securities.
Time and a half.
Like, yeah. No one's getting overtime in this bitch.
Relationships are like 6 months or less.
Yeah, no, I thought it was
commitment issues. Never mind. But congratulations on getting divorced and having a new chapter of your life.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. My wife initiated it. It wasn't what I wanted, but you know, I think it turned out better. We both have someone who's very much like us, but better. Do you know what I mean?
Okay,
that would crush me.
Like a better version of me.
Oh man!
I'm also with a better version of her.
Oh, okay.
That's a win-win.
Yeah, like right. In ways that I went to my daughter's school like this, and they were like, "Oh, we met your brother. He's really nice." And I was like,
ooh.
"Oh, that's not my brother."
Oh.
And they're like, "Boy, I went up to him. He's not your brother," because I went up to him and I was like, "Hi, Paul," and he was like, "I'm not Paul." So I just assumed he was your brother because he looks exactly like you.
See, I always wanted to get somebody that looks completely different from me. Like, get somebody else. Like,
yeah,
just completely.
I had a girlfriend in college who we're still friends. She's great. I think she's a wonderful person. But she married a guy, and I have a funny feeling that he's a better version of me. And this is from years ago, and it still kind of bums me out a little bit. You know, I, my best friend got divorced, and he's an accountant, and he's like he's in good shape. He does like MMA, and she left him, and then ended up with some like 50-year-old like doctor who bought her a house in a cul-de-sac when they were like in their 20s.
Right.
And I was like, listen, man, if she had found a guy who was like a more successful accountant who was a little bit better shape, then yeah, you came up short. But obviously, you're not what she's looking for.
Right.
So, you know, move on to the next thing.
I don't feel like anybody that I've dated has like dated somebody that's like me, because I'm like the wind, bitches.
Steady walks dogs on leashes. He likes guys on leashes.
Well, they still don't look like me.
Right.
But I've had situations where like I dated a guy, and then the next girl he dated, like I'd seen them around, like you know, like it was like this neighborhood girl, and Paul is also from Yonkers, so like one of these like McLean chicks or whatever, and like so I saw her around the bars or whatever, and then like I think she might have been like first generation Irish American. My ex was Irish, but like I got a haircut after we broke up, and then like 2 weeks later he's dating her, and then she gets my haircut, and so like I was just like, oh. So it's like it's just like not exactly single white female, but it's like single white female, but it's like a single black female kind of thing, but she's white. It was very, it was like single, like half and half cookie. But it was like a strange kind of thing, which I think that like maybe he was like, oh, she's got a new haircut, it looks cool. And she's like, I can get that haircut. And I was like, this is strange. But I've never really had like anybody. But then again, I don't really talk to my exes. So I don't really know. Like, I just see people in passing.
The great thing about getting divorced is, like, after that, you're like, you could break up really easy. I'm, like, Facebook friends with women I dated. I'm liking their statuses. It's all great, you know. I'm like, just don't. Like, one woman broke up with me. She wanted to have dinner. She, like, took me out because she wanted to, like, break it to me in person. I was like, you didn't have to do this. I'm not taking my apartment. I'm fine.
Oh, damn. Right. Whoa. That was great.
Yeah. She's dying.
I mean, you know, because that was great.
Yeah.
That's so good.
Yeah, because I'd much rather just have you call me, text me. Don't gotta like do it face to face.
Yeah, I've been through this. It's much. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like when they fire you at work. It's like, you could have just called me.
I got fired on my day off one time. Like, Ryan, can you come in?
Oh man.
Yeah.
Wait, they had you come in to fire you?
Yeah. Great. Oh, it was like a Wednesday or something random, like, just like, oh, yeah, I got to talk to you. Can you come in and meet me real quick? Great.
I got fired on vacation in Greece.
Like, while you were on vacation?
Yeah. Like you should call us before you come back to the office. Wow. I got that text.
Oh.
And I was like, I was like, well, we should have this before 6:30 because I have dinner and won't care after that. And then, yeah, they were like, you don't have to come back. And I was like, okay, well, cool. How much are you paying me? And when can I pick my stuff up?
Yeah.
And then I ran to a comedy class right after that. That was great. Look at life.
Yeah.
Hello.
So now, does your current girlfriend and your ex-wife get along? Like, do you?
Yeah, they get along well. Yeah, yeah. My girlfriend now is she's a very good human being. Like, she wants everything to work, and she's making everything work with everybody. And they get along well, and that's, I'm happy because they talk.
Okay.
Stuff and my daughter and their arranging schedules and like it's better I'm not involved.
That's a very new thing.
That's really cool.
I come from a really old school Italian family, and my uncle was the only person in my family that's ever gotten divorced ever, and it was such a huge deal when this happened like 25, 30 years ago and he never like was in the same room as his ex-wife again. Like they would have to like have a third party would have to drop the kids off. Like they were, because that's like a like old school like Italian divorce. It's like, oh, you're dead to me. Like we're done. We're not gonna be friends. We're not gonna hang out. And it sucks. Like it's because like the whole family then is like complicit in your bullshit. You know what I mean? As opposed to everybody getting together and actually like doing right by the kids.
So how does your daughter like your new girlfriend?
Yeah, she loves her. She's like does you know. So basically the way it works is my girlfriend is the disciplinarian, and like she's my daughter doesn't really have like parents. She's got like a committee, you know.
Oh, okay.
You know, she's got like a couple, you know, her friends, and so it's like, but of all those people, my girlfriend is like the disciplinarian, but also
you gotta talk into the mic more.
She's also the cool one.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's the sweet spot. There you go.
But it's funny because like she's black, so that's one thing. My girlfriend now, and they're like,
yeah, boy.
One thing it does is it makes it like I don't know. There's certain I don't know if it's that, but like she doesn't talk back as much, you know.
She done heard about the black mamas.
Okay.
She knows better.
My ex girlfriend's black. I think we got a theme here going on.
Yes. So now, are you thinking about having children with your current girlfriend?
Yep, current girlfriend is pregnant now.
Congratulations!
Congratulations!
Or I like to say, you're what?
Way to bury the lead, Paul. Hey, Paul, have you ever had a baby with your girlfriend?
Congratulations! Yeah, that's so cool. You.
When did she do?
November.
Oh, see, I worked that
trip.
Wow.
November when?
Like 15th or something.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Okay.
Scorpio. We're the best right here.
What does that mean, Scorpio?
You're going to have a little firecracker on your
head.
Yeah,
you are.
Letting you know right now.
Good.
Yeah.
My daughter right now, she's too nice. She's terrible at Simon Says. So she does like she always loses that very quickly. Like she's very agreeable.
Scorpio's like to win. We're winners.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are you a Scorpio also?
No, I'm a Sagittarius. I'm right after. I'm after they diluted the crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. A little crazy. Yeah.
Do you guys?
We're insane.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah.
Do you guys believe in astrology?
I'm totally into the zodiac. Totally.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Only because every time I read it, it's so spot on.
It's like spot on for me too.
Yeah, at least in the descriptions. Like maybe not the day-to-day horoscopes, fine. That's a crapshoot. But when I read...
Like the core personality, that's me.
Yeah.
I can't deny it.
You don't think it's just like a general thing? Like sometimes you get sad and you're like, that's me!
Because, like, I kind of studied it in high school. If you read, like, the other ones, like, every other sign, they're all a little different, depending on, like...
So, like, I'll give an example. Like, I'm a Taurus, and, like for a Taurus, like, one of our Achilles heels is that we're supposed to have, like, problems with our throat. And so, like, I have actually had my tonsils taken out, like, 5 times, because I keep growing them back. And so, like, that's, like... So I would say normally, like, I would be like, oh, this is a bullshit thing, but, like, I get laryngitis, like, I have had throat surgeries, like, I get a lot of, like throat infections or whatever, and
I didn't know, like, throat was on the menu of things that could...
It'll tell you, like, love, everything. And, like, Scorpio and Taurus are opposite attractors. We're, like, exactly 6 months apart, like, on the zodiac, and so, like, we get along instantly. Like, that's, like, we're, like, Scorpio and Taurus.
So I'm April, and my ex-wife is September.
April what?
April 16.
Oh, so you're an Aries.
Yes, and my ex-wife was early September.
Libra?
Early September, like a couple of days ago, like
Virgo?
Yeah.
Virgo.
So what would that is that a bad combination?
No one's bad.
No, that's a good combination, I feel like. I mean, but you'd have to like you'd have to go.
It's,
you gotta,
it's you it's, should it's, really it's, be it's, more worried about more where your specific. Girlfriend is now.
It gets like really specifics to like the day that she was born, the
like
day that
year.
You were born,
the
year.
I have a compatibility book.
Yeah.
So if you want to give me the dates, I can text you.
I don't believe in any of this stuff.
You know what? That's all fine. That's, I don't believe the news that I read half the time, but it's fun to read.
Fake news. But funny thing is, you're an Aries. That's kind of like an Aries trait.
this is like the Matrix.
Everything tastes like chicken.
In high school, this is how I didn't have a lot of friends in high school. So one thing I tried to do to meet people was I tried to learn palmistry.
The lines.
I could like talk to them, and I'd like be touching their hand, and like we could, you know, have something to say. But I only read some books. That's all. I don't know anything about it. But yeah. I should have made stuff up. Yeah, it was a good, it was for a nerd, it was a good, like.
No, that's like really smart. Like, how can I talk to people? How can I engage? Like, you see, this is what I was talking about creation. You created a life of being able to talk to people. You took something on in order to talk to people because you said, I don't have any friends. How can I get friends? I need to talk to people. How can I talk to people? Learn how to read their palm. Everyone has a palm. I can talk to anyone.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's the secret.
But I was doing, you know,
it's the palm.
When I was, I used to bark for shows in Times Square, and what I learned is like the best thing to do to get people to talk to you is you guess where they're from. You can just, you just walking out, you know, people are just walking down the street. You don't have to be like, you know, get, hey, you want to see comedy? So you could do that, but you could also be like, you're from Phoenix, and people would like, or can I guess where you're from? And people will stop. People just want to get that attention.
Especially in Times Square.
Especially Times Square, and it's fun.
Because they're not from here.
Right.
Because if they were from here, go fuck yourself.
Right. You're from New York.
I got one lady I was really proud of. I was guessing where she was from. I was like, you're from Queens, right? And she was like, no, I'm from Rochester. And I was like, are you sure? She was like, well, I grew up in Queens. I was like, there you go. I felt very proud of myself.
Amazing.
So now, where did you go to high school?
I went to Roosevelt High School.
In Yonkers?
Yonkers, yeah. Okay. Where do you go?
I went to Ursuline. I was there from 6th grade to 12th grade.
Yeah, that was the Catholic school. That was like...
It's you went to the 6th to 12th.
That was the fancy one.
It was, yes, I went to an all-girls college prep, thank you.
Yeah. My dad was too cheap for, like, all that. We were like, I'm going to send you to the terrible public schools.
Well, like, my parents, because now, just kind of give a little insight, like, what was going on in the public schools in Yonkers at that time?
Yeah, well, that was it was in, like, late 80s, and they desegregated the schools and the housing then. And so, like, I was, like, in the suburban, like, the white side, and, like, they sent everybody to, like, they were like, hey, let's mix this all up. And I always thought it was like a crazy thing, a crazy time, and I could never like explain how crazy it was. And then 3 years ago, it was great because HBO made a miniseries about it.
Yeah.
Which is like a great thing. That like that, nothing signifies your childhood was crazy as like HBO. Like, making it. I got to be like, okay, it is crazy.
But
I just thought that it was crazy at the time, but
Yeah, because, like, that's basically, like, I never went to public schools because, you know, at that time, like, Yonkers public schools and was still segregated. And so my parents didn't trust that I would get a good education if I went to a public school, so they sent me to private school the whole time. So, like, they didn't want to try to put me in a public school because they didn't feel like... Because at that time, like, the feds had just taken over the school system and, like... They still kind of didn't trust the whole idea that, like, oh, that you'd be able to graduate and be able to read. Because, like, at that time, like, if you were black and you went to, like, a black school in Yonkers, like, you very well could graduate high school, like, not being able to read.
Yeah.
And that was, like, part of the reason why the federal government had to come in and step in and desegregate the schools. And so that's kind of why, like, that whole time, like, I went to private schools because, like, my parents didn't trust the system.
Can I tell you how I got into the Gifted and Talented program?
How did you get into the Gifted and Talented program?
In sixth grade, that's when they desegregated. And so seventh grade, I went to I went to the new schools. And so I tried to get into the Gifted and Talented program. I did not get in. So I went to Emerson Junior High School, which is a terrible school. Partly because I once saw a documentary of Jadakiss, and he went there. And he was like, oh, it was like a terrible school. I'm like, that's right. And I showed up there and like it was really like it was amazing like how I realized it wasn't like about race necessarily like there was, I guess there's like institutionalized racism and Emerson was like the institution, you know.
Yeah.
I got there and like it wasn't like a math class in like sixth grade. You're like, you know, here's just, you know, trigonometry or whatever we were doing. They're like, you know, like, you can do it, you're really smart. But Emerson, like, they're like, this is how you write a check. Like, literally, we were trying to learn how to write. And I remember thinking, like, I have to get out of here. I want to go to college. Like, I can't, my confidence can't take this.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I was 2 weeks in, and I escaped by, this is one thing I learned, is the thing not to say on the bus ride home, is
the N-word.
You kind of can say that if you're in a fight with somebody. Like, that's allowed for whatever reason. If you're in, like, a physical fight. I didn't get beat up.
You live to tell the day.
I live to tell the day. I've learned you don't mess with Albanians. That's what I learned.
Yeah, there's a lot of Albanians in Yonkers. Yeah.
Passes.
But I told these girls on the bus, I said, hey, move it, which is not a thing to say. And so they beat me up right on the bus, all three of them. And I think they just got bored because they just, like, no one broke it up. Like, they just stopped. And then I learned, well, the other thing I learned is when that happens, you just transfer schools. Like, nobody had a problem with me transferring schools. And like, two.
It's like, I got beat up by three girls. Yeah. Okay, yeah. See you next year.
Yeah. Damn.
I actually went to a gifted and talented school in a bad area, too. I grew up in Elizabeth, New Jersey, which is, like, right next to Newark.
That's true.
And it's funny because I was in Catholic school, and my mother was like, you're not learning anything. So there, the alternative was either go to, like, the neighborhood school, which was really bad, or they had gifted and talented schools. And it was interesting because there they had different kinds of gifted and talented. So they had, like, the art students, they had the performing arts students, they had the academic students. But the year that I applied, the only spot was in the like, athletes. And I am not an athlete. So they had me in a group of kids, and I was, like, the non-athlete with all these athletes. So even in the gifted and talented school, I was still getting beat up by the other athletes.
Oh, okay.
But, then we moved to the country after that. But, yeah, at the time, it was, like, my mom was, like, there's no way my kid's going to Roosevelt Elementary School on the corner. Like, I had to go get on a bus and go to another school.
Like, but I kind of had, like, a quasi-similar situation, but I actually refused the gifted and talented spot. So, like,
probably got your spot.
men. So what happened was, like, I went to an all-girls college prep, and so I had been in regular English the whole time, and then somewhere around, I'd say, the end of junior year, they, like, tested me to see if I had, like, learning disabilities or whatever, and it turned out that I had a few different learning disabilities. But then when they can, like, convert all of your testing with the lens of your disability, it was like I was supposed to have been in, like, honors English the whole time. Because, here's the funny part. Like, when they did my IQ testing, I was, like, verbally a genius and mathematically an idiot. Like, that's just, like, how I ranked out. So throughout the whole time, I ranked as being, like, normal. Because, like, when you're really bad at something and really good at something, like, you just end up being, like, a normal person. But then if they go and they pull out, like, oh, but you're really good at this, so, like, you should be doing this at the highest level. And so they wanted to put me in high honors English senior year. And I was just like, no, I'm not doing it. And they're like, well, what do you mean you're not doing high honors English? And I was just like, I've been reading and writing at this level the entire time. You guys just figured out that I'm smart, and now I'm supposed to work my ass off the last year of school? No. And they're just like, I'm like, I already got accepted in college. Like, I'm not, like, gonna, like, this is my coasting year. And they're just like, no, but, like, you should have been in high honors. And I'm like, yeah, that's your problem. Like, I'm not doing it. Like, they're just like, yes, I've always understood Shakespeare. I just can't spell, bitches. Like, you know, and it was just kind of, like, funny because, like, and math, I had that bad, like, math. Like, I was in consumer math also. So we had to learn how to do, like, timesheets. Yeah. Basically, consumer math was that you had to figure out how to, like, fill out tax forms and, like, do, like timetables for, like, people working. It was just like, you're going to be a bookkeeper, so you need to know how to do Excel. It was like, I never took, like, algebra or, like, trigonometry or anything like that, because they're just like, that's going to bring down your GPA. You're just going to take consumer math because you're just going to be a consumer for the rest of your life. And so, like, now it's, like, funny because, like, my like, real job is very, like, math intensive, but it's all Excel. So, like, I kind of worked out that they taught me Excel in, like, ninth grade, but at the same time, it's just, like, they would have never thought I'd be able to do math. It's just, like, I can do math if it's just this equals that, like, yeah. You know. But, so, kind of like understand, like I had the opportunity to kind of go into like the gifted, and I was just like, nah, not chill. I'm coasting.
I was always
funny
told
that you say that because I'm sorry, I love to cut you off. But, yeah. It's so funny that you say that only because I had a similar experience where it's like I tested for the gifted and talented. I went to public school my entire life, except for like kindergarten. That was Episcopalian school, whatever. So, so I tested for gifted and talented in third grade. However, standardized tests were never my strength. That was never going to happen for me. And I even remember being in seventh grade and asking my seventh grade math teacher, why do I need to know this math? And instead of answering the question, he called my house and I got in trouble for asking that question. And from then it was just like, fuck math. Like you weren't able to answer the question. I wanted to be a disc jockey at that point. My life, and like obviously still do.
1-2-1-2
Help me understand why I need to pay attention in your class. Yeah. And he wasn't able to give me that. And instead he called my house. So from then, and that was seventh grade, for then for me, it was like, fuck math. I don't need to know any of this. I already know I'm fucking smart because I was in gifted and talented in the third grade. So I'm just going to coast this shit and do what I need to do. I just feel like if there had been any other discussion or any other, you know what it's good to have? Options.
Right.
If that conversation would have been had with me, I would have looked at math differently and I would have taken it on and it's a different challenge. But because he was so flippant about my question and I should be in trouble because I'm questioning why do I – like to sit here in this chair and I'm sure there's a lot of math – involved. But why do I necessarily need to know that? So I think that there are a lot of kids out there who have gifted and talented capabilities and we might not be speaking to them in the way that they need to be spoken to.
No, and I agree because like, you know, I literally like my entire job is math. Like I'm an analyst
Similar things. Yeah, product development you're an analyst. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just kind of like projecting out like future selling and kind of like trying to see trends and
I was like, but there's no, I'm from the Midwest and there was like no like gifted and talented program. Like the whole time,
like, because you're all gifted and talented.
Nobody told you.
Yeah. No, where I'm from in Milwaukee, like all of the high schools have like some sort of like thing that they specialize in. They're all specialty schools. So like say if you wanted to like be an AP student, you would go to King because you like would like on track to like go to college. I went to an arts high school. I had to like audition to go to the arts high school and like I had like a major. I was a theater major. I had theater.
So you went to the Fame of Milwaukee.
Yeah. But every high school has like something that they like, you know, majored in.
It's funny. You made me think of something. I not only did I go to gifted and talented school, but when I was in college, I worked at a camp which was called the Summer Institute for the Gifted, which is the worst thing you could call it. Like these
is
poor
that
kids.
X-Men camp?
It was well, you know what? We went to see the first. I escorted a group of kids to see the first X-Men as like our day off trip, and we're sitting there in the theater. And it shows Professor Xavier's School for the Gifted, and I turned around, I was like, "You freaks!" Like maybe not the best thing to do when you're actually chaperoning the kids. But these kids. It's funny because these kids needed to loosen up. I felt like my job was to I had a 9-year-old who was doing trigonometry in his free time. I was like, go outside and climb a tree. Like, you don't need me to be a disciplinarian. You need me to learn how to, like, you know, laugh at yourself. But I worked for them in the East Coast at a camp outside of Philly and then in a camp outside of in Ohio at Denison University. And I noticed this was late 90s, early 2000s. And I was like I worked for like the infirmary both times. So it was my job to make sure the kids took their meds. And all the kids in the Northeast were on ADD medication, and all the kids in the Midwest were on antidepressants. I'm talking like 90% and 90%.
They tried to put me on antidepressants because I was like gay when I was like, you know, I'm still gay. So, but like when I was like 16, I was like dealing with it, you know, and they tried to put me on antidepressants. My like father refused. He's like, no.
Yeah.
They're not like going to do that. But like that's like what they wanted to do.
It's funny. I think about this now. It's like, I think it was a terrible thing for them to tell me that I was gifted. Like, they should have, like, I heard somebody say this. It's like, you should tell a child what you did was very intelligent, or what you, that the way that you solved that problem was really great or really smart. But to tell a kid that they are gifted puts this pressure on the child. Because I know growing up, anytime I mess something up, it's like, but Peter, you're smart. How come you couldn't figure this out? And if anything, like, those, that's why, like, a lot of these kids end up really screwed up, because they've been told that they're special and that they're hyper intelligent. So anytime they can't do something well, then it's like, well, but you're smart. What's wrong
with
you? You're smart.
I think that it's like a double-edged sword, because like, I kind of went through school feeling like I was like the dumb kid, like amongst all the smart kids. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, we had a thing called like the resource department, and that was like basically where like all the kids that weren't like keeping up to the grades, like we had like a one-on-one tutor or whatever. And so one of the things that, and this is kind of where they kind of figured out like my different like learning differences, but like one of the things was is that like they gave us like all these various tests, and like so I can't do math in my head, but I'm very good at seeing patterns. So they were giving me like college level work in like 7th and 8th grade, and I didn't understand the work, but like I understood the pattern of the answers of each test. So like I was getting like, you know, like 90, like 80 percentiles on these tests, although like let's say the test was in biology, I might be getting like a C in biology, but I'm like doing 100 on this test. And through like them focusing on the fact that like every one of these tests was written by the same author, I had cracked the code of the pattern of the answers. So like the every third answer is going to be C, every fifth answer is going to be D, and I didn't.
Oh wow!
I didn't, and it wasn't like something that I understood the material. I just understood that like that I just kind of in my own head like cracked the code of the answers. But like if you asked me the question of the test, I wouldn't know it, but I would be able to pass the test just because I cracked it.
Wow. Have you ever played blackjack?
No.
We could be there. We could be at the casino in 90 minutes, right?
People I know gamble. It's all a numbers game where they know the mathematics behind it with poker or with
how I do my job.
I don't gamble anymore, but like it's a lot of Asperger-y people for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's why me and everyone has a hippopotamus club somewhere, because you know, even the Asperger-y people who are too smart give up. Huh?
I want to smell blue.
I want to smell blue.
Going back to the larger point about school, it's like when it's like school makes mediocre kid. When anything is like an institution, it's that big and it's everybody. That's what you get. You get like a baseline. If you have to, you know, you have to take this test and you have to do show up at this time, and like the special kids kind of get left out. But like I think if anything, being told that you were not smart, it probably pushed you to do what you're doing now, which I think in a way was like the best thing that could have happened to you, don't you think?
No. Because like I feel like I was treated like I wasn't smart, but like now kind of seeing like a different group of people, like I feel like when you're in high school, like you're in a very isolated pocket of people. And so like if you're told everyone around you is a genius, you think that you're the only stupid person around. But then when you're kind of like let out into a pool of like the real world, and you're just like, oh my God, everyone's fucking stupid. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? It's just like, I don't even understand how half these people are still alive. Like, but I kind of feel like, if anything, I feel like had I known that I had capabilities and worth, that I probably would have just tried harder or like even like put myself out there. Because I feel like that was like my problem in high school, is that like I really never put myself out there because I kind of felt like, oh, I'm already dumb, like why am I gonna try to get into like an Ivy League school because I'm dumb and I'm never gonna get into it. Whereas if like someone had said to me like, you know, something like, no, like, you're fucking sick with patterns. You might not be able to, like, multiply in your head, but, like, you can see this, like, weird shit happening, that I would have been like, oh, well, maybe this will work for something. Whereas, like, I only applied to safety schools, and I got scholarships to all of them, but I just kind of thought, like, oh, well, that's just what happens because, like, no one wants to go there. Not like, oh, no, not everybody gets a scholarship to go to this school, but it's just like, oh, yeah. Like, I feel like I never got to know my worth.
That's why, like, me going to an arts high school, it definitely helped in, like, how I am today, just because I went with a bunch of different talented people. Everybody, like, had, like, a talent. Like, you either are a singer, or you played, or you're a dancer, or you played a music, played an instrument, and just
like being you avoid all the hierarchy stuff.
Right, yeah. And you just, everybody, just like, oh, yeah, like, we're all talented. Yeah. And it doesn't, like, you know,
see, I
it definitely just stayed with me.
I feel like an oddball no matter where I am.
It comes from agreement. You know, if you...
Like,
you,
we're all... It's like, it was very inclusive. Like,
absolutely.
We're all talented, like, and got to know each other.
Yeah. And because you were in an environment that was inclusive and had agreement
and nourished our
talent, you're able to flourish. If someone had agreed that you are good at patterns, then you would have looked at yourself differently. If someone had agreed that there had been some options outside of just learning these numbers on a page and that actually would be beneficial for me later in life,
right,
it would be completely different. World of agreement is a game changer, because like, if you're living on the outside of that, then it's like, no, but I'm this, and everyone else is like, no, you're not, and you're like, but no, I am, and like, no, you're not.
No, you're awesome on the drums. No, you're a great dancer. It was, you know,
and then, but then you get to live in that bubble too. I'm just saying, you live in the bubble of whatever agreement around you is.
But like, let's say you said you wanted to be a DJ. Now, had someone said to you at that age, you know why you need math? You love music, right? All music is math. And then you'd have been like, oh, music is math.
Exactly. Exactly. And then I would have taken on music and math as a different thing and understand the fourth and the eighth and da da da. And then that would have had fractions figured out and all that. But no one had that conversation with me.
But like,
he just chose to call my mom and tell my mom, she's asking questions in my class. Fuck you, Mr. Massimo.
Fuck you, Mr. Massimo.
I disagree. And I going back to I'm sure he was an asshole, but
I'm sure he was a very nice man, but he definitely did
not
handle that well.
And still am.
I'm throwing shade for days.
I'm obsessed with Richard Pryor, and this is an obnoxious opinion, but when I was a kid, like, I grew up, my parents are still married, like, middle class, I'm the first, like, grandson, like, I was supposed to be, like, a doctor or a lawyer, you know, and I was an artist.
Parents
and
married, keep bragging.
I know, it's like, I said, like, I have no reason to do stand-up. I got Netflix at home, like, what am I doing trying to do stand-up shows? And, but I said this in front of, like, a group of, like, actors that I was in school with, and, like, I was an outsider there, because, like, they were talking about, like, Brecht, and I was like, I just want to do, like, Rocky movies, like, that's why I want to be an artist. And I said that, like, I was obsessed with Richard Pryor, and, like, part of me as a kid fantasized, because, like, Richard Pryor's life was, you know, he grew up in a bordello, his grandmother was the madam, his mother worked in the bordello, his dad, I guess, was the pimp, and he had this crazy life, and nobody ever gave him a shot. Like, he was a nobody, he had no chance, and he fought against all of that and became the greatest stand-up comedian of all time. Most of the guys that grew up like me are, you know, running pizzerias and or, you know, small law practices. Right. So for me, like, I if anything, for like art, I think art is forged in fire. Do you know what I mean? I think it's not about depression. It's not about, you don't have to have, you know, a drug addict for a mom to be a great artist. But if you are if you survive that kind of experience and get out of it alive, I think a lot of beautiful stuff can come out of that.
To piggyback on what you were saying, the pressure of, like, my dad's a pastor. I'm also the firstborn son of, like, a pastor. And then, like, you know, I'm in theater, actor. Like, there was always this pressure of, oh, you're going to go to Howard. You're about to be, like, you know, huge, this, and this. Mm-hmm. But then, at the same time, I'm gay. Dealing with that, that's that, like, fire. Deal with this, you know, pastor or father, but like on the inside I'm like going to like look at dicks at the mall, like
yeah.
You know, those like issues that like happen, but now I'm doing this
swinging in dick.
Yo.
Yeah,
so now, Paul, like, how do you feel like starting comedy a little bit later in life?
Yeah, I mean, the way I think about it is like, I could think about it like I'm tense, you know, it's hard. But I the most optimistic way I can think about it is that I can relax because I've already not made it.
Yes!
Like guys in their, who are like 22 and they're doing comedy, they have pressure. You know, like they gotta make it before they're like 28. I've already not done that. Like that's already failed. You know, so I get to just try comedy and I could just for a year or two, I could just work on jokes. You know, there's no pressure. You know what I mean? Like if I just stop for a year, no one's going to know. You know what I mean? It's like, and then I could just start, and it's like, it's not, people are going to be like, oh, well, you didn't do it when you were 43. It's never going to happen. You know, never happened.
You know your bills are going to be paid. Like, so that takes that pressure off it, which is nice.
Yeah, because,
I also think that when bills are being paid, yes, but I think that you're going, like, you're reaching and grabbing beyond that, and you're just, and there's a sense of ease to it because it's just like, no, this is just what I'm going to do. It's like a decision, you know? It sounds to me like as easy as crossing the street. Like, I'm going to make a right, and that's just what I'm going to do. And there's no, I must be the right choice, because you're not attached to it. I don't know.
I hang out with all these, do shows and everything with all these, 25-year-old guys, and, they're all, I just try to keep thinking that, because, I can get sucked into their way of thinking of, oh, I got to do this, I got to do that, and, I'm like, oh, I know I don't have to do any of that.
It's I started comedy a little bit later, but, I mean, later for, the young side of later, and, part of me is still kind of if I had started, 5 years sooner or 8 years sooner or whatever, I would be in a good place. And then another part of me is just, that's just not where my life was taking me at that moment.
Yeah.
And I also kind of feel, again, going into the fact that I kind of feel like comedy is drawn a little bit on pain, that when and life is that when you're young, you haven't really done anything. You might have done some shit and oh, your parents got divorced or maybe your dad's an alcoholic, but you haven't really done anything yet or experienced enough to write about. It's kind of just an author that it's you need to go out and live life before you can write about life.
I think you're right in many ways, but also I feel like a lot happens to people. I mean, looking back, I'll be like, oh, it's Emerson, all this kind of stuff happened, but I think the biggest thing is when you're young, you just think you're invincible. You just you're optimistic. You don't it takes a while. I think the biggest thing is life has to kick you in the face and you're oh, all those plans, I'm not going to be the one that makes it to the top. And this is what it feels like. And, you know, then you can find something there, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just kind of feel you just need to go through life. And I know some great comics that made it started when they were, teenagers, but for the most part, I do kind of feel you need to go out there and you need to live life and you need to have life kicking in the balls a couple of times before you have anything to write about, because no one cares that your mom's a bitch. You know what I mean? It's just no one cares that you didn't get asked to prom. No one cares that you've got an overbite. It's these are things that I feel young people are kind of, and young people back in the day when young people needed to have a personality. Now young people just need to have an Instagram presence.
And a filter. Filter.
Right. And a filter. You don't even look like that. You got pimples.
Yeah.
I think that we forget that you have to have an audience. And the audience are people that are living life, that have their struggles, that are probably middle-aged and have, had the babysitter for the night and they want to go and release and have relaxation away from their regular life. And they don't want to hear words of wisdom from 23-year-olds that live in Bushwick. They want to hear from people that they can identify.
It's tell me again how your trust fund is paying for your rent.
Yeah.
I auditioned for this one club, and it was great because I had one of my best shows ever, but I was just walking around before the show, and it was all people in their 30s and 40s with kids. They looked like they had kids, and I was I am going to crush this so hard.
So now we're actually we're gonna have to start wrapping it up because Reem is giving me that bitch. You got 3 minutes. Get the fuck off. Look, but. Before we go, Paul, where can everyone see you? Where can they follow you on social media? What projects, gigs do you have going on?
Yeah, I do some shows. I'm in Greenwich Comedy Club, Broadway Comedy Club, and other places. Stuff I'm pushing is my kid shows. I do family shows I do stand up comedy shows like that are kid friendly.
Okay.
I'm all about that. It was partly because like how do I do comedy? And like during dad weekends,
you know? Yeah.
And so my daughter and I host a show in Long Island City.
Your daughter does.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. She's 10, and it's called the Guess What Show. Guess What Comedy Show. And then I also have a show in the Village Lantern in Manhattan, and we just started that a few months ago, and it's called Bring Your Mama. Which my co-producer is black, so I'm really right. Yeah, but that's it's crazy because we've actually been selling out our shows, and Long Island City is like it's a fun show, it's a scrappy show, we have a good time. But I think it's just like Manhattan, it's just everyone comes out for that, and so yeah, we're having a good time. So come to either one of those shows, or during the day, and they're a lot of fun.
And what where time? Can I see the schedule, and what days are those?
Check on Facebook. Go on Facebook and look for or Eventbrite. And look for Guess What Comedy Show or Bring Your Mama, which, again, I always feel weird saying. But
I rolls off the tongue. It's like, don't. You have a black pregnant girlfriend.
Okay, good.
and congratulations.
I wanted to say that. I'm so glad.
And, like, do you know where you're having it?
No.
Okay.
You're going to give me a surprise?
Yes, it's a surprise.
Oh, that's the best.
I just want a kid who's into dinosaurs. That's all I want.
And I'm sure they will be. And just very quickly, Peter, where can everyone see you next?
You can find out my information on Facebook or Instagram. It's Peter Garaci, GUARRACI.
Dara.
I'm just sad my name isn't Mary, so we could have Peter Pearl and Mary. But Chocolate Gem with a J, Instagram, and Dara Jamat on Facebook. And you'll find my shows there.
Well, I'm Marissa with a Y, so you can call me Mary.
Yes!
You can catch me at Broadway Comedy Club for Fashionably Funny on September the 29th at 10 o'clock. Check out my website, marissasmith.com, and on Monday I am going to be at the pit at 8 o'clock. Ronnie Daniels.
Oh, I'm going to be hosting Fashionably Funny with the one and only Marissa Smith.
He will be.
On the 29th, so very excited about that. I got some shows coming up. You can look me up on Ronnie Daniels, Instagram, and Facebook.
All right, you guys. Have an amazing Friday. North Korea, please listen to Dennis Rodman. Don't blow us up. And everyone in Florida, be safe, and I hope you have a floaty. Yes. Good night.
Your reign on the top is short like leprechauns as I crush all you whack MCs and rapper thugs. That was refreshing. Yeah. You can catch me in the Mecca, looking so mean. Blue Yankee fitting while I'm chilling with my team. Madison Square on the sideline screen.